This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, cheeky.
You're my favourite player.
Decent.
Hello and welcome to The Front Three. My name is Adam Boltwood. Joining me from a coffee shop in London is Lawrence McKenna.
A chain store. I'm in Starbucks.
Oh,
it's
product
the
placement.
Safest place in West London.
The safest
where everyone
place?
Comes. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Are you in some sort of trouble?
You could go, well, yeah. It turns out Sepp Blatter wants my head after the things I said about him on the podcast.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
I've had to hide in Starbucks.
And Dave, where are you hiding out today?
Oh, I'm just still hiding at a parent's house in Bournemouth.
Oh,
a wonderful walk on the beach this morning. Saw some waves. It was really windy.
Sounds really good. Did you enjoy the Christmas festivities? All the football going on and all this?
Oh yeah. The football's not been as good as I thought in terms of the top.
Amazing.
It's been decent round mid table. You know, the Stoke Everton game was a highlight, but you know, Man United, Chelsea,
Liverpool shutting Leicester out for the first time this season. That's a pretty big achievement, Dave. Especially
sorry,
for a backline made of a Lovren.
They're on the turn, though. They're absolutely on the turn. They're going down, Leicester City.
Do you really think, Dave? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they're going down, Leicester.
They're not going down, but I mean, their form is going to turn. Jamie Vardy is pretty much going to be, you know, won't be scoring that many more goals this
Let's
season.
Talk a little bit about the Premier League now, what the sort of situation is there after all those Christmas games. The best place to start is probably, as you're saying there, with Leicester, seeing as they drew 0-0 with Man City last night. It means they're joint top with Arsenal. But Dave, you're saying Leicester, you can't see them maintaining this form.
No, I think this is the beginning of the end. I'd say
losing to Liverpool, drawing to City.
Yeah,
the end, Dave.
Beginning of the end for them.
Wow.
When you say the end, what do you mean, Dave? Do you mean
I just mean that they're going to start free falling now down the league. I can just see it. I can see them not picking up results in certain games. I feel that people probably finally figured out Jamie Vardy and Mahrez how to defend against them, how to, you know, limit them on the counter attack. And I think, yeah, this was one of those things where I feel this is the turning point.
Okay, where do you think Leicester are going to finish, Dave? First off, concrete answer, end of the season, Leicester are going to finish
seventh.
I think I'm going to go for sixth myself. I can't see them going below that because, you know, they've only drawn two in their last 10 games. They've only lost one. I mean, Lawrence, where can you see Leicester finishing up then?
I can see like eighth, maybe.
I think they're going to
finish above them. I don't think they're going to free fall, but I think they'll, like we said, return to the mean because it's just the way it is in the league. I think, you know, we look at the size of their squad, we look at the players they can bring in. You know, they played very well against Liverpool, I thought. We're not unlucky to lose out, but, you know, Liverpool essentially Liverpooled them. And then they did play a different tactic against City, which I found quite interesting. For the first time this season, they sort of diverted away from what they normally did. And some people saw that as a negative thing. Some people saw that as a positive variation from Ranieri. So, they're not as two-dimensional as we paint them. I think, you know, they... Excuse me. So that's actually Platini coming for me now. They've got a lot more diversity to them than I think people give them credit for. You know, Vardy was a huge part of the rise of the team, but there have been other great sides to that. I do think Dave's right, though, but I also think just because you've worked out Vardy doesn't mean you've worked out all their sources for goals.
in a way, I think you have. I think if you limit Vardy and you limit his space on the counter attack, you're going to find this Leicester team's not going to be as creative playing. You know, the next few games, the next six games, are playing Bournemouth, Spurs, Villa, Stoke, Liverpool, and Man City. Arguably, all those teams look really, bang in form right now. Bournemouth are really turn the corner, Spurs are rocking. Villa look a lot better under Remy Gardner. They're starting to play some decent stuff. We all know about Stoke City smashing Man United on Boxing Day after beating Chelsea, then Liverpool, and then away at Man City. So it just looks difficult for them.
I see what you're saying. It's also them, maybe they'll get tired. I mean, Drinkwater put in a really good game, but at the same time, they are beginning to look as if, this is taking its toll. There's only so long.
They have got a thin squad. Let's talk about Arsenal, who are top. I'm not going to lie, I did enjoy it. They suffered a 4-0 loss to Southampton on Boxing Day, but they've actually had a very good December. They've won four games out of a possible five. So what have you made of Arsenal then, Dave? Because Ozil has all of a sudden banging for.
Oh, he's been banging for most of the season. It was really interesting, the Southampton game. They sort of went back to the old Arsenal, getting counter-attacked down the flanks and really being exposed on the break. You know, their centre-halves, a number of times it was a 3-on-2, on Koscielny and Mertesacker, and those two just can't defend wide positions. They're not very good against, defending against the break when it's going down the flanks. But it's just interesting that they did, the next game, picking up the 3 points. That was massive for them, that sort of the bounce-back ability after suffering an absolute mauling at the hands of Southampton, who again are pretty, that was a really weird result for them as well, because they are massively out of form. We're seeing that the Pochettino effect on Southampton is slowly fading, and we'll find out that Ronald Koeman isn't actually as good a boss as he's been made out. You'll find that Pochettino, the work that he did, the pressing and all that type of stuff, that's going to start to fade. And then we'll see the Ronald Koeman that was managing Benfica and Valencia with really, really good sides and really struggled. I think that's what we'll see. I could say that he could be probably the next manager to be sacked in the coming months.
Well, on Arsenal, though, where can you see them finishing then? Because now, after that Christmas period, they've become a lot of people's favourites to win the title now. I mean, would you go along with that?
I just can't. I can't see it because of they just have that vulnerability. They have that vulnerability.
So are you going for second at the end of the season?
I think second, and I think the Man City will just come through. You know, the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, Aguero, who's just coming back. There's just too much firepower there. And then when Vincent Kompany gets fit again, that is a very, very solid team. I think the thing with Arsenal is they've got most of their players back now. You know, they are missing Coquelin, they're missing Santi Cazorla, but Ramsey and Flamini have done a brilliant job, whereas City are missing two massive players in Vincent Kompany and Aguero. So it's like basically Arsenal have got they've got their hand down, and City are still playing poker. They've still got some cards that they're hiding, and then when they unleash those cards, it's going to be a royal flush.
But surely then you could say the same for Arsenal, who are hiding their hand through injuries, etc., etc. They've got a much bigger hand, essentially, to pull from. And what we're seeing now is that the analysis of Arsenal, while people were talking about the small size of squad and that people were injured, etc., and that therefore that would hinder them, we've got the lowest points total to be top of the league at this point, I think maybe even in Premier League history. Is that the case? And then it means at the end of the season, you may not need more than 80 points to actually win the league. Now, that's obviously going to favour City and Arsenal, because those guys are already top and further ahead of the others. But personally, I think when Arsenal get some more of their people back, and if they do choose to invest in maybe a DM in January, then they've got a goalkeeper, they've got a record-breaking goalkeeper at the back, and a back line which is getting better because of the way they're playing
so
together.
Are you saying first, Lawrence? Are you going to go out there and say Arsenal are going to win the league?
I'll say Arsenal are my favourites to win the league at the moment. Yeah.
I would agree with you because of what you said there. The players come back from injury, and also because Wenger came out today and said it's going to be a very busy January, and I'm expecting them to make that push, because this is a... This
you
is
know what good, that means? That means they'll miss out on five targets.
They'll spare
me. Well, I was busy.
Sweet.
I was very busy missing out on people. Sorry.
But this is the perfect opportunity for Arsenal to win the league. I know we said something similar last year, but no team looks like they almost want to win it. So if Arsenal don't do it now, they should be, I mean...
Well, I also think this almost feels like, if we're going to write the narrative, then it's that, Arsene Wenger wins in his final season at Arsenal, chooses to step down, and, there's more narrative to go there, I think. I also think he'll probably feel that this team is a much better time to take over than, say, a few seasons ago. And, I spoke to a United fan today, and they were saying, so we all thought Sir Alex left their club in rude health. But I do think that Arsenal are a very different kind of health to any other club in the Premier League because of the way that Arsene Wenger's frugally managed at times, but also sort of managed to bring through certain players and also managed to keep their books balanced.
Well, my prediction is first for Arsenal. Pains me to say it. Manchester City, I think, are going to finish second. Dave, I mean, would you agree with that?
Nah, City top, Arsenal second. I just can't see it. It's just one of those things.
By a lot, though, Dave? By a lot?
No, exactly. It's going to be very close. You know, you did mention that a team could win the Premier League with just 80 points. You know, we're halfway through the season. Arsenal on 39 points, with joint with Leicester, obviously. And that's halfway through the campaign. It's ridiculous. But then what you're going to see with that is that the natural thing for that to happen in the second half of the season is the good teams to absolutely start obliterating the smaller sides. We've seen it being very, very competitive first half of the season. So there's going to be a natural, you know, regression again to the big teams smashing the small teams, and then the small teams sort of doing even worse than they are doing.
I do wonder, though, who are we going to see invest big time in January? Because I think a lot of clubs realise that if they stay up this season, then the goal has ultimately been this season, just stay up. You know, people are talking about mid-table obscurity, but mid-table obscurity this season gets you a lot more than
you
would have thought last season because of the cash. So I think a lot of people are going to think, do we invest, do we speculate to accumulate, essentially, in January and come the end of the season? Because, yeah, Leicester are pretty much safe now. I'd imagine they're going to look at whether they can invest at some point come the end of the season. They're going to want to keep this momentum going and not let that fade. I wonder whether certain teams will go out there and invest to stay in the league. And that will mean that the diversity of the league and that the overall narrative is not the same, and we might see somewhat of an aberration of a season.
Well, let's talk about the real deal. Dave, Spurs, the only team to win their three games over the Christmas period. 2-0 against Southampton, 3-0 against Norwich, and then 2-1 against Watford, with a bit of a last-minute goal there from Heung-min Son.
Of a last-minute goal there.
When I saw it, I couldn't believe how he'd done it. And to nutmeg Gomez as well was a little bit cheeky. But
Borderline offside, right, when the first cross came in?
No, definitely. But I'm not going to complain. So what have you made of Spurs then, Dave? I mean, where do you think they're going to finish? I'm going to go for third myself.
Yeah, no, I think that as well. I think third.
Which
Harry Kane is
unbelievable.
Absolutely banging form. Had a little bit of a null period at the start of the season, didn't he? But now he's scoring goals for fun. Broke Teddy Sheringham's record of the most goals in a calendar year. He scored 27 goals in 2015, Harry Kane. And he just looks really raw again. It looks like you get the ball to Kane and something will happen. His finishing looks really good. I'd love this finish. I think it was when you were at home against, was it Norwich? And he got played out wide. Well, Dele Alli played the ball to him.
Spurs, and he still banged it in the corner.
Yeah, that finish was absolutely unreal. You know, the angle was so tight. But I think that's what Harry Kane, his strengths are, finding the bottom corners. Mm. Whether he's outside the area, whether he's inside the area, whatever the angle, he seems to have like some sort of like laser sighting to hit it in the bottom corner.
Ridiculous
it's
finishing.
Ridiculous, isn't it? Really good finish.
So you're going to go with third. Lawrence, would you agree with third for Spurs? I mean, I almost feels too much to say it because I'm a little bit worried about being too optimistic. But it's good at the moment. We've only lost one in the last 10 games.
Yeah, but I mean, weren't we talking about that run and how that, there's a lot of draws in that run, isn't there?
Yeah, so Spurs are joint. So they've lost the least amount of games in the league joint with Leicester, but they've also drawn the most
amount of games.
Joint with Everton, I think.
So it's, I think that's probably an indication of the direction that Leicester are moving in. Mm. I still don't think it means third for them. A lot of this is also dependent on whether United keep or change their manager, I think.
Well, let's talk about United, then we'll move on to United. Dave, there, without a win in six Premier League games, bit of a tough Christmas period. 2-1 lost to Norwich, of course, 2-0 lost to Stoke, and that 0-0 draw to Chelsea. What are your thoughts after that Christmas period then?
Well, it doesn't matter, Adam, because we went out and we attacked and we scored. You know, we scored goals, but the opponent scored more goals than us. It's just one of those things. You know, if I could say that, I'd be happy. But at the moment, this United team is atrocious.
Like, did you watch them?
Absolutely rubbish. It's just frustrating to watch against Chelsea.
First
half an hour when you're getting Martial involved in the game, you're getting the ball to him. United played, I think, 19 passes to him in the first 25 minutes. And United looked really good. Martial was attacking players. And then the next 20 minutes after that, they only found them eight times. It's just one of those things where this system, this formation, or whatever the style of play, they're not getting the best out of the players inside that system. And it's just it's so square in the final third. It just goes wide and then it gets crossed into the box. Is that literally all they work on in training when they get to the final third? You know, playing the ball wide, crossing it in and overloading players in the box. You know, we might as well get a target man. Might as well go and buy Andy Carroll in January or something stupid like that. It's just... We lack like times in the game where we're sitting outside the opponent's box with, say, two central midfielders sort of playing the ball square to each other and then looking for a through ball, looking for a run in behind. It's just so, so boring to watch. It's so frustrating.
What are your thoughts on the future of Van Gaal then? Because today there's reports coming out that, you know, he's been offered a way out of United. Danny Blind, the Holland head coach, said he could do assistance with the national team. And there has been talk that, you know, Van Gaal was thinking about resigning over the past fortnight, only to be persuaded by Ed Woodward not to. So do you think he's going to be there for much longer? If he can turn it around, obviously, he might stick around, but it doesn't look like he can.
I think, again, it's not going away from that point, you know, whether I'd like LVG there or not. You know, his style of football at the moment is awful. The players aren't performing. The players are the ones that are hiding at the moment. They are hiding. The level of performance of the likes of Juan Mata at the moment, obviously Wayne Rooney, Bastian Schweinsteiger had a half-decent game for the first half an hour, but they're not the levels that these players that are, in quotation marks, world-class. It's absolutely rubbish. You know, they wouldn't get into half of the teams in the top four at the moment. I just think that without United having a clear plan of who they want next, whether they want Mourinho or they want Guardiola, they need to speak to Guardiola right now, and they need to say, right now, are you going to be at Manchester United next? Do you want to be at Manchester United next season? Because if he's not there, then there's no point in keeping Louis van Gaal, and we might as well go for Mourinho. That's the situation that they've got to evaluate, and they've got to find out whether, if you keep going for Guardiola, there's no point of sacking Van Gaal. But if you're not going for Guardiola, there's no point in keeping Van Gaal. That's the situation.
And the top four is looking in danger at the moment. I mean, what's your current prediction for their finish? Because I'm thinking fifth or sixth now. I reckon
they'll sneak in. They'll sneak in the fourth. They'll go for a spell last season. I think it was when we played Spurs. I was lucky enough to go to that game where it really changed, and we went on a run of winning six on the bounce, you know, beating Man City 4-2 of another fantastic performance from United. But it feels like, again, with the performance against Chelsea, the players were up for it. But then the game before that, they looked like they didn't care. They looked like they couldn't be bothered. Like they turn up, oh, we'll beat these guys. We don't need to work harder than Stoke. And they got outworked. They got outfought. And that is the biggest thing for Manchester United. You're playing for the club of Manchester United. And if you don't want to play for them, if you don't want to put the effort in, you don't want to make the tackles, you don't want to work hard, then you might as well bugger off, to be quite honest. You might as well get out of there and go and play for, you know, Athletic Bilbao or something like that, or Valencia. Or, you know, it's just so frustrating watching them right now.
Yeah. Even then, though, you sort of think, especially with United, it is a case of perception. And, you know, a great thing for Sir Alex was that he was really good at changing the perception of the players and getting them to play, basically believing in the team. And I don't think that necessarily the players look like they play with a lot of belief in the side or the system, or a lot of belief or confidence in themselves. Because, you know, well, within that system, it basically they don't seem to understand it.
Don't get it at all. And I think that's the biggest thing. You know, did, again, going back to that tweet that I got absolutely slammed for, Louis van Gaal is destroying young players' confidence. And it's so relevant now with all the players, not even young players anymore, but the confidence of any of the attackers or any of the players at the moment. It's just completely shot. But then they've got to look inside themselves, and they've got to get their balls, they get their cojones, and they've got to start playing football. Because if they don't, then there's no point in them being there. I'd scrap a lot of them at the moment. The first, apart from Martial, apart from Morgan Schneiderlin, probably get rid of a lot of them. You know, Chris Smalling again, maybe keep him and David De Gea. But then the rest of the players, they just don't care. And that's the thing that frustrates me the most. It doesn't look like they care. It doesn't look like they want to win for the manager. I don't care who the manager is. You've got to play for Manchester United first and foremost.
Lawrence, quickly before we move on to those other sort of candidates in the top 10, what is your prediction for Man United's finish? Top four or just below that?
If Louis goes, then I'll say top four. If he stays, say fifth or sixth.
I like it. Bold. So let's talk about those other sort of teams floating around the top 10, all quite bunched up, all within a few points of each other. Crystal Palace are currently fifth, Dave. They haven't lost a game in their last six. Three wins in that run over Christmas. 2-1 win over Stoke, 0-0 at Bournemouth, and 0-0 to Swansea. Palace looking very good this season under Pardew. Zaha and Bolasie impressing, but do you think they can maintain this sort of form and finish in the top sort of 5, 6, 7?
I don't know if I can see top 4, 5, 6, 7, because I think that when they come up against the larger teams in the second half of the season, I think they will come a little bit unstuck. You know, the next few games they're playing Chelsea, then they're going away to Aston Villa, who I've already mentioned look a lot better. You know, and then they're playing City, then Tottenham. I feel that it might turn for Palace. You know, they've done very well. They've got the points that they've needed to get. But Pardew is one of those managers where he'll they'll perform for six games and they'll be rubbish for six games and they'll perform for six games and they'll be rubbish for six games. It's just the nature of Alan Pardew's management and that type of thing. But, you know, the really interesting thing for me, you know, Bamford cut his loan there short. Bamford was a player that absolutely smashed the Championship up last season. And whenever I've seen Palace, I've thought that the players that play behind the striker, you know, the likes of Zaha, Bolasie, and then Jason Puncheon, they've looked really good. But then all the centre forward, whether it be the fellow that used to play at Ipswich, who I can't think of his name right now, or whoever, it just didn't seem like the striker was performing. Whereas they had a player of Patrick Bamford's quality, who I think is a very good player, and they just didn't play him. A bit of a shame for Pardew, but they've got Kabay. They'll do all right. They'll finish in the top half of the league, 100%. They'll be fine. But I feel that their form might slip up soon. Connor Wickham was the name I was searching for. Apologies, chaps.
Lawrence, talk to me.
He's good.
Let's talk a little bit about Liverpool then. Obviously, your team. Yeah, right. Christmas.
Players of a similar level. Teams of a similar level.
2-0 draw of West Brom. 3-0 loss to Watford, of course. They did win against Leicester 1-0 at home, and they've got Sunderland tonight. If they do win that game, they'll be up to potentially seventh in the table, level on points with Manchester United.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. What are you making of Liverpool at the moment? What are your sort of hopes and expectations of where they can finish?
I think a lot of people see the seeds of progress at Liverpool in the way that they picked out certain roles for players. They're expectantly looking towards January for one or two players to come in. They've already signed, I think it's Grealish from Red Star, with kind of a season-long loan there for him, and then he'll come the end of the season. So there's sort of a statement of intent of the kind of players that Klopp's looking to bring in. I think I might signal the end for a couple of Liverpool players, and that's kind of the worry between now and the end of the season is, if a lot of people are thinking about, well, where am I going to go next? Am I part of Klopp's plans? How many of them are going to be pulling for the Liverpool cause and looking to pull for the overall system? And I think it was the Redman TV that essentially said, was speaking about the idea that this is a really long pre-season for Jürgen Klopp. And, whilst we're seeing very positive things, doesn't mean that Liverpool are going to be able to achieve if there's going to be so much transition at the club. I think there's a slight excuse in there because, you know, losing to players like teams like Watford and getting taken apart by players like Igalo and Deeney is perfectly fine in the short term, but they have to fix those problems in the long term. Mm. So it's basically a bit of an ask
this season. He needs time to bring in his foot.
But you know what? I don't know, because the quality of the players and the intelligence is clearly there. It's the application and getting over some of the problems that were maybe latent from a previous manager, and also sort of working out what culture Liverpool want to employ from here, and essentially getting over the hangover that Liverpool thought they had. Because I think there was a bit of almost inertia at Liverpool that Klopp's having to take out of the team. And that's been a real problem, because essentially Liverpool they sort of slept over the last few years, because, you know, after they lost out in the league, people sort of went, well, you know, we know they were good enough in that time, but are they good enough now? And a lot of players, I don't think, necessarily believe that they were. So it's paying a lot of lip service. And I think Klopp's slowly trying to change that.
What's your prediction for their finish then? What position?
I'd say fourth or fifth. I think an outside hope.
Optimistic, I like it.
They've got an outside hope.
Dave Lawrence was talking there about Watford. Obviously lost to Spurs at home 2-1. But before that, went on a very impressive run. 4 wins in a row against Villa, Norwich, Sunderland and Liverpool, drawing Chelsea as well. On 29 points, level with the likes of Stoke and West Ham and the other two teams around there. I mean, who do you think is going to finish highest out of West Ham, Watford and Stoke? Because Stoke as well looked very impressive over the Christmas period.
Yeah, I'm going to say Stoke. I think Watford have been really good. Kike Sanchez-Flores has been absolutely excellent since he's come in. They play a very good style. I think we spoke about that in the last podcast. Igalo still banging the goals in. Deeney still being a massive threat. You know, he absolutely destroyed Lucas against Liverpool. But I feel that Stoke, against Manchester United, it was an absolutely fantastic performance. They tore United apart on the counter-attack. And Altovic, I think, is a real key player for them. You know, he's the player that runs in behind. So stretches the defence, and Altovic is running behind. Then it opens up the space for the likes of Bojan and Shaqiri to really sort of get involved and that type of thing. We started to see Shaqiri score some goals, started hitting a bit of form. So yeah, I think that Stoke with Mark Hughes, obviously Mark Hughes is a manager that they've been linked with United, been linked with Chelsea of late, but I feel that he's a mid-table manager, similar to Brendan Rodgers. These teams, like your Stokes, like your sort of your Palaces, he fits these clubs really well. And I think that they are playing a good style of football. They've still got that sort of Stoke aggression in them. You know, the likes of Shawcross coming back from injury, I think that's massive in terms of the ability to keep clean sheets in the Premier League. And then Jack Butland, Premier League goalkeeper of the season for me so far. So I feel they'll be above. And West Ham, they're going to continue their slide. Obviously, picks up a win against Southampton, but the slide is coming. The slide is still there.
They hadn't actually won a game in their last eight before that, I think. So, it's interesting if they can turn it around from here. But yeah, that's the sort of the stats of the Premier League table at the moment. A lot of teams sort of bunched around that sort of 5th to 10th position.
What about Stoke? I mean, Stoke are a fascinating side this season.
Oh, yeah, as Dave's saying, they're playing very well.
Yeah, talk about the perception of Stoke and the way that we see them and the way that we sort of perceive them being, a certain kind of side.
Stoke alone, isn't that? That's what I was saying over Christmas. They've all of a sudden.
Well, I mean, you'd argue that then where can, are Stoke in as good a position as a number of other sides, considering the amount of money that's going to come in the season.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Well, it's so interesting. You think about like Arnautovic, Shaqiri and Bojan. They should be playing for like top European sides. You know, like talk about like teams like Schalke, come fourth in the league, Valencia maybe, or maybe go to Italy, talk about Roma or something like that. But then these players are playing at Stoke City. It's just incredible. The money in the Premier League is incredible. It's an incredible thing, and it's good for the league. Obviously, we're seeing top caliber of player, and it's just good to see. And that finish from Shaqiri, though, was it a chip? Did he mean it? Of course
yes.
he did.
Did he? I think he did. I think he definitely did. I know we're being disparaging about Stoke to some extent. People talk about Stoke. I don't necessarily think the players live within the boundaries of the city. In the same way that Liverpool players, Manchester United players don't necessarily live within the bounds of the city. So I think, the Midlands is a more attractive prospect. And certainly Stoke have benefited from the likes of Aston Villa and those guys falling away.
Do you think then, Dave, so we're talking about how this is one of the most unpredictable Premier League seasons ever, where anyone could beat anyone. You're talking there about how...
I think it's predictable if you use the right metrics, though.
I think
I think a lot of people were sort of careful about what was happening with Liverpool and Watford and those kind of things. And people were sort of like, well, Liverpool, they're going to play this and play that. I think, if you match the tactics up of the managers, then very often you can actually come out with a correct prediction. But it tends to be that our perception of the last few seasons was that there was the good teams and the bad teams, or teams that could be beaten if you played them with your style. Now it's much more about the fitting of the tactics and the way that the two fit together. And I think there's become there's a bit of a transition, and there'll become more awareness of the way that teams tactically fit together. I wonder how many managers are going to try and go back to, almost work towards the Barcelona-esque style this is our system and this is our philosophy that we're going to work towards this. I think a lot of people are caught up in the short term of not being that. It's almost like how to describe this in a simple way. Look, we're either playing our philosophy or we're playing badly. And I think that's the perception at the moment, is that people think if you're not playing your philosophy, then you're playing badly. And some people, for that reason, criticised Leicester the other night when they played against City. They said, Leicester have reverted away from that 4-4-2. That's terrible for them. To some extent, I think that's a good thing, because it shows the tactical side. Maybe that's a bad example, but I think, these games are more predictable. It's just that we don't use the right metrics to predict.
But do you think that you're talking there tactically, Lawrence? I mean, Dave, what about what you sort of mentioned there about those players? We see this money flood into Premier League, the likes of Stoke buying Shaqiri, who you're sort of saying maybe you'd expect to be a different team. West Ham signing Dimitri Payet. We had Everton signing Lukaku a few seasons ago for 25 million. Has that contributed to this league where it does seem more so than ever that anyone can beat anyone?
Yeah, I think so as well. But I do feel the top sides just haven't really been performing in terms
as well as the top sides not being very good.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like both. But then we have seen an influx of very, very good managers into the Premier League. Kike Sanchez-Flores, Jurgen Klopp have come in. Likes of Pardew's not coming in, but just evolving himself. And then Mark Hughes, we spoke about him as well. Martinez. Finally got his sort
Let's
of...
Let's not forget Poch,
exactly. I think that's what we're finding, that the Premier League sort of looked at as this league very fast-paced, tactically very unaware. But the more managers that we come in, the further foreign input of managers in the Premier League, is just going to be better for the league. It's going to hopefully improve our ability to compete in Europe with the league being more competitive, I think. But then again, it's difficult because the likes of Bayern Munich come March, they've won the league already. They don't need to play their sort of best 11 against the likes of, let's say, Cologne or a Mainz. They can just go out, stroll out, and they'll probably pick up the win. But then, for example, if City get, I probably think they will get the furthest in the Champions League this season. If they have to play a really important game against Bayern Munich, then Saturday they've got to play Crystal Palace. That is a big ask. You know what I mean?
It's like one of those things. There was an interesting interview with Jurgen Klopp over Christmas. Might have been Football Focus or Match of the Day or something like that. And he was basically saying, he was pointing again to the winter break. And he was sort of saying, if England never has a winter break, that you're never going to be able to, both for the national team and in the Champions League, as you're sort of saying, you're almost never going to be able to compete with the likes of Bayern Munich, who, like you say, they can rest players where they've already won the league in March, but also their team's been rested over this period where we're playing, what, 3-4 games within a week-long period.
I completely think that we should be bringing in a winter break, but I imagine Lawrence has got a big input on this. I can
absolutely
agree. No.
All I'm saying is, I think there's more to it than break or no break. You know, maybe we don't need to schedule 4 games over that time. You know, just keep them normally spread out over that time. Not only do England choose not to have the break, but then they choose to schedule a lot of games within the time that other people can have a break. So it makes it a more challenging league. You'd say there's other positives to it. It makes it a more marketable thing. It means that more people are watching the Premier League around the world, because during a drought of other people's football, people are coming to the Premier League. So in the long run, it might seem very prudent. You know, fitting in and conforming isn't always the best thing. And I think, you know, we see progress as, you know, moving towards a homogeneity of football to some extent. But we've seen this year that doesn't always work.
I just thought it was interesting to see Jurgen Klopp come out and say, obviously as someone who's worked in the Bundesliga, a complete outsider, to come in and his first, you know, sort of observation is, my God, you guys are crazy to play these many games in a week. And it's just an interesting point for. But anyway, look, that wraps up the Premier League chat, as it were. I think I went for Arsenal, Lawrence went for Arsenal to win, Dave's gone for Man City at this sort of halfway point. Top four, I think I'd said Arsenal, Man City, Spurs, and fourth, I think Man United are going to creep in. I think Man United will creep in, because I don't think Louis van Gaal is going to be there for much longer, essentially. And as Lawrence said, if they do change the manager...
Hey, guys, I've already got my scarf.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They were selling him.
And not only that, I've already got my piece of A4 paper ready to write Mourinho out, Mourinho in.
Who's your top four, Lawrence? I think you said Arsenal. Did you say
it was Jose Mourinho.
Spurs,
I think, Man City, Jose Mourinho, Mauricio Pochettino. I'm going to say Arsenal, City, Spurs, United. Ooh, okay, Liverpool, same, you missed out.
Same. And Dave, you went for Man City, Arsenal, Tottenham. And who did you go for in fourth?
Are you going to say United are going to sneak in.
Wow. Okay. So there you have it, guys. Let us know your predictions for the Premier League winners and top four on Twitter. At the front three. Now we're going to move on to the talking point, which is going to be Team of the Year and some end of year awards. Right, so super simple. Team of the Year first up. We'll move on once we've all agreed on who belongs in each position. We're playing, I believe... we're going for a little bit of a 4-3-3, seeing as we sort of should have a front three. It sort of makes sense, right?
Next year, we might be playing a 4-4-2. I think it's becoming trendy.
We cannot do that because we are the front three. So it needs to be a front three no matter what.
So, yeah, but you could play front three. You could play 4-4-2 with a diamond, and technically we'd still be a front three because of that.
Let's start then in goal. Okay.
Simon Mignolet, most Premier League clean sheets in 2015. Thank you. Next.
Errors since 2000, the start of the 2013-14 season in the Premier League, Lawrence.
Yes,
sorry,
Dave. Mate. Yes, Dave. Every goalkeeper's a seesaw. So.
Let's start with the obvious nominees. We've got Manuel Neuer, who is probably the best goalkeeper in the world. But in terms of this year... you've also got David De Gea, who's been exceptional for Manchester United, Dave.
Yeah, I'd say so. When I looked into it last season, it was something like 19 points that he'd saved United from just making saves. That obviously turned in the game state. So, you know, you're going from a draw to a win or a loss to a draw. It was just crucial. You know, the game against Liverpool, the game against Arsenal, made like I think they made 8 saves in both of those games, and that was, they were good saves. You know, if you remember the Sterling cream through on goal 1-1, he's just become an absolute beast. He's doing it again this season as well.
One against Arsenal was pretty ridiculous as well.
Yeah, that was a joke of a save. You know, one against Lukaku last season against Everton as well. And then recently he's been making some fantastic saves. You know, against Chelsea it was 3 or 4 stops that were a joke. The save against Pedro, and then to get up and make a brilliant save for Aspilicueta from about 3 yards out. Yeah, for me, I'd say David De Gea.
Wow. We've also got the likes of Marc-Andre ter Stegen, Barcelona, Claudio Bravo, obviously Gianluigi Buffon, Juventus getting to the Champions
League. I'm going to make the case for him. I think he went to the Champions League final. I think he played at a team that's actually won something this year, and I think he's a critical part of them winning something. I think that at times, David De Gea's status at Manchester United and as the most coveted goalkeeper does boost somewhat the way that we perceive him. I just think we should go for a goalkeeper that's actually won something this year.
You see, I'm going to disagree then again and say that Buffon, yeah, he was part of a team that had a very, very solid defence in front of him. Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini, then Lichtsteiner and Patrice Evra. That is an absolute beastie back five. Manchester United
and
playing
was
with players. Yeah,
but
he was part of that. But the thing with De Gea is that he's had to make so many saves to get United out of trouble. Because the defenders, you know, Smalling's shown quality this season and the end of last season. But then the rest of them, you know, Daley Blind's got a mistake in him. Whoever's playing left back, right back, whether it's Young, Darmian or whoever. All, you know, big mistakes. And I think that's where De Gea sort of steps up a bit because he's been so good.
Or could you counter that by saying that that's actually where Buffon steps up and makes his back line into a unit and is having his time because he's worked as part of that unit for a number of years and that's beginning to pay off now. Whereas actually, when David De Gea was asked to step up, he chose to leave Manchester United and tried to force the remove. And Manchester United were forced to try and keep him. So there's a big counter there to say the intangibles of Buffon being a leader, those kind of things, will take him one step further and have taken Juventus a step further. Whereas those intangibles, which will come to the fore for David De Gea in the next few years, have not come through yet because of the team he's in.
I'm going to throw out there, just before we go on, if Buffon was in the Man United team, he wouldn't have made as many crucial saves as David De Gea.
No, but he's not, Dave. But at the same time, could you say that if, you know, you're talking about other goalkeepers making mistakes, those kind of things, you could say that's down to the back line that sits in front of them and the positioning of those sorts of things. So I think there's a number of different factors. And I just think overall, we can't not acknowledge that Buffon's actually won something.
We should say, though, Manuel Neuer winning the Bundesliga as well. That's a hat-trick of German championships. He got the record for 20 clean sheets in a Bundesliga season as well, which is pretty impressive.
It's a good point, but did he make it to a Champions League final?
No. So, I think Dave makes a very good point about how crucial David Hay has actually been.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, but you can
but
think
Dave,
about that. Think
Lawrence
about
makes
Gomez,
a good point
about.
Yeah, Lawrence makes a good point about actually winning something, the tangible.
You see, if we could merge ter Stegen and Claudio Bravo together, obviously one of them played the Champions. You know, ter Stegen played the Champions League and was brilliant in there, best goalkeeper in the Champions League. And then Bravo was the best goalkeeper in La Liga, you know, record clean sheets in La Liga. We could merge those two together as a Claudio Stegen. You know, we'd have the keeper, but unfortunately,
Ter Bravo.
Ter Bravo. That's quite a good name, that Ter Bravo.
Okay, right. I think we're going to all have to agree on one. I think Lawrence maybe just convinced me of Buffon. I think, you know, that sixth Scudetto of his career, fourth in a row, captaining Juventus to the final.
A game of two halves, and Lawrence is 1-0 up. That's all I'm saying.
I would have gone for
a game of three halves with Dave.
I would have gone for Neuer myself, but I think he's a bit of an obvious choice. So I like that you both went for different choices.
Can I say, I don't get when people say, and I found this when I was making the Football Daily Team of the Year. Don't go and watch it. It's better here. But the someone kept saying, that's too obvious. And I was like, the reason it's too obvious is because he's so good.
Exactly.
Sorry, mate, you're not in the team of the year. You did too well.
Yeah,
you deserve to make it.
Yeah, you wouldn't say that about Messi, would you? Like, Messi's obviously in the team. So we can't put him in because it's too obvious. Messi is in the team.
I guess so. I guess what the point that they're making there is that actually there's more nuance to it. And, if you want to make a more interesting piece of content, you'll probably pass over Messi and Neuer and those guys and talk about some more, talk about some other players. No, because we went for Buffon. Dave was going for the obvious. I was going for the more nuanced one because, I work at a sports stats.
You're a hipster, mate. You're a bloody hipster, you are, Lawrence.
Let's do the left-backs then. There's a few options. We've got, obviously, David Alaba. We've got Alba for Barcelona. And Dave's putting it as Aspilicueta.
I'm saying Alaba.
It's hard to overlook Alaba.
It's hard to overlook him, especially when he's qualified for the Euros with Austria.
Yes.
Yeah,
the roles he's played in there, all those kind of things. And his tactical versatility, the fact that he can be used as somewhat of a utility player. People keep asking us questions about it. And not only that, he's bloody Austrian.
Right, that goal
against Arsenal as well.
That goal, though, bro.
Let's put him straight in then. And let's go over to the right back. Dani Alves. Seventh season at Barcelona.
It's almost too obvious, isn't it, Adam?
It's too obvious almost. he was the right back in the treble winning team.
Lichtsteiner, you could argue maybe Juventus, but I think Alves has got us won it hands down. He was absolutely brilliant last season.
Let's put Alves in there. Now, centre backs is where things get a little bit more tricky. Again, you've got the likes of Piqué, Mascherano. That treble is pretty convincing to include them in the team. But you've also got the likes of Koscielny, Dave, Thiago Silva, Jerome Boateng, Bonucci, Chiellini. I mean, who's your preferred centre-back pairing there?
I'd probably go with Piqué and Jerome Boateng together. Even though, Jerome Boateng suffered badly at the hands of Messi at the World Cup, didn't he? Fell down that hole. Oh, was that? No, that was a for Bayern, wasn't it?
He fell down. He didn't literally fall down the hole, though.
He fell down the hole. No, I think Jerome Boateng this season, he's looked so, so good for Bayern Munich. He gives them an extra option to go long to Lewandowski. We've seen a few goals this season where he's just pinged like 30-yard balls against Borussia Dortmund, the big game in Germany. Two of his passes for two of the Bayern goals were unreal. That's why I think with Piqué's aggression, his anger, he looks angry again. It looks like someone's wound him up again. So I think Piqué Boateng for me is just beatable.
Piqué, I think I'd agree with. Lawrence, is there anyone you want to chug into the mix?
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is.
Because actually, also, we're overlooking two people who've won Liga, but that's probably the reason we're not putting them in there, because they've won Liga. Could you put Ramos in there?
I feel like Ramos has had too much
of an up and down year, hasn't he? It doesn't seem to be consistent. His character doesn't seem to be one that fits in with sides. And Piqué and whoever else you want to put alongside him, you'd imagine they're pretty solid characters.
I think that your argument for Buffon, like obviously Sergio Ramos is a world class defender, incredible player, but that argument you make about Buffon is sort of, about what they've achieved. He hasn't achieved a great deal. His team hasn't achieved a great deal in 2015, so it's difficult to include him as good as he is. So we all agree on Piqué, right?
We all agree on Piqué.
Need a partner.
We can't. There's a load of people we can discount. We cannot say Kompany. We cannot say Hummels. We cannot say Thiago Silva. We cannot say Chiellini. We cannot say John Terry.
I'd say Chiellini.
Why could we not say
Chiellini? Could be the one.
Because they got Italia.
What about Godin? Could we say Godin? No, he hasn't.
Yeah, Godin, though, again, hasn't had a great...
Garay?
Lawrence, you've got to decide this. Is Chiellini or Boateng?
Fine, I'll go Chiellini because Wait a minute. Have we got a German representation in that back line? Because we've got Buffon there.
We've got Alaba.
You know what?
Oh,
we've got to think about chemistry here, guys. Boateng.
Boateng speaks English. Boateng. EK speaks English. I mean, the guards chat to each other.
Yeah, listen, Britain first. Yeah.
Let's move on to. We'll sort of have two central midfielders and one attacking midfielder. Central midfielders.
I can't believe you didn't say Vertonghen, by the way, Adam. I'm a little bit disappointed in you.
Well, I think Vertonghen is, you know, a very good player.
I mean, what you say is it almost goes without saying Vertonghen, doesn't it? It's almost too obvious.
Yeah, in many ways.
Alderweireld.
Centre midfield, we've chosen. We've got to go with Jerome Boateng. Centre midfield, we're looking at the likes of Vidal, Busquets, Rakitic, Pogba, Pirlo.
Guys, sorry, I've been doing a bit of research. I want to put my another name back forward for centre back.
Oh, hello. We've cemented the positions.
Sorry, mate. But this guy has been influential in world football, not just fucking, you know, your local shitty teams. Franz Beckenbauer. Guys, he this year has said a lot of interesting things. Can I put Franz Beckenbauer in our team of the year?
No. You can make him. What position does he have at Bayern? Director of football or something?
I think it's mostly the deluded old man. But
you can make him the deluded old man of the team if you want. You can make weird comments every now and then.
Okay.
But midfield, listen, we've got the likes of.
Easy. We don't even need to ask this question. Dave, what name am I thinking? 1, 2, 3. Sergio Busquets.
Sergio Busquets is he a dead cert to get in this team?
100%.
Sergio Busquets. Okay, so then we've got Vidal, who won the Coppa Italia, got to that final, won the Scudetto with Juventus. Now impressing at Bayern Munich. He could be
Vidal. Could I put forward? And I know this probably won't be favourable again. Verratti.
Verratti is again. I think we've got a certain bias against Ligue 1, which makes it difficult.
Yeah, Pogba, there's a reason why.
Yeah, Pogba as well achieved the same as Vidal. You've also got Rakitic on that treble. Oh my god, it's difficult. Iniesta as well, but he could
Rakitic
be more.
Rakitic gets overlooked too often. I feel. Yeah. He just does get overlooked, doesn't he? It's not fair.
If we've got Busquets, I'm going to say that we cannot put in Rakitic as well. I want to change up a little bit. Too many Barcelona players. So I think we're looking at the likes of either Vidal, or Pogba, or Verratti.
We could drop Iniesta from attacking midfield to central midfield.
But again, another Barcelona player.
Yeah, but they've been pretty good, all right?
I know. They have.
Guys, I'm only saying it. Ozil.
Attacking midfield, though.
We could put him in attacking midfield.
Can we put him attacking midfield? Or have we got someone else who has to fit into that attacking midfield?
Well, De Bruyne, Iniesta.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, all right. I just thought, you know, could he drop back a little bit? Could he dictate play for him?
Vidal,
then, other outside shouts like Santi Cazorla, people like that.
Vidal, Busquets, Iniesta. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough.
Mesut Ozil.
Ozil. That's what I was thinking is, we go Busquets, Vidal, Ozil?
No, you've got to have Iniesta over Ozil. Sorry.
Okay. Let's roll.
We're doing Vidal, Busquets, Iniesta.
Ozil's another level right now. Another level this season. Come
left
on.
Wing.
Ozil 20 this season. Assists in the Premier League in 2015. That's beaten the record set by Thierry Henry in the
2000s.
But you're telling me you'd rather have Ozil in your team over Iniesta, though?
No, I think we go with Iniesta, Busquets and Ozil.
My God, man.
That is
a dirty central midfield.
No. We've got to have Vidal in there. We need Vidal in there.
Yeah, we're going Vidal, Busquets, against. I'm sorry. Right, left wing.
Sorry,
we're obviously looking at Cristiano Ronaldo, top scorer 2015 with 55 goals. We've also got Neymar, of course, who's been sensational. Alexis Sanchez. Eden Hazard, his form this season has sort of almost ruled him out from this position, I'd say. So we're looking at Ronaldo, Neymar, Sanchez. I don't think you can put in Ronaldo because although he has been exceptional in goal scoring terms, again, the lack of achievement for Real Madrid compared to the likes of Neymar, whose goals and assists and contributions have actually helped win a treble.
But again, he has had a movie.
And he's had a good movie. I'm going to suggest Neymar. Is anyone disagreeing with me?
I think Neymar should be the man. 11 goals in the Champions League this season, joint top scorer. I think he's moved on. I think the crucial thing as well, when Messi was injured, he was still, you know, he basically took the creative input of Lionel Messi does have on this Barcelona team, and he took it on his shoulders, and he was absolutely brilliant. Created the most chances in La Liga, completed the most take-ons, most assists, top goal scorer.
He's pretty bloody decent.
He's been pretty decent.
Right wing, we've got Messi or Mahrez. I'm tempted to put in Mahrez.
We said we can't have any more than one player in each section, so we can't put Messi forward.
No.
No, we
just chucked Iniesta and Busquets in midfield. We've overruled it.
I don't agree. I just think, you know. Who? They did. They
so
did.
So you're telling me you'd rather put in Mahrez over Messi on that right wing? Sanchez?
But you can't just say just that. I mean, what if you had an adaptable front line and you said, I mean, Suarez might deserve to get mentioned there. And then also, I mean, what about the likes of David Silva?
Not this year, Lawrence.
What about...
I think it's the obvious choice,
Kingsley
Lawrence.
Coleman.
It's the obvious choice. There's a lot of Barcelona players in there, but it's the right choice. I think you know that deep down.
What about Costa? Costa, you know,
well, let's right. Here's a little bit of a debate, because Messi, we'll chuck him on the right wing, but striker, that's where you've probably got Suarez, who is the obvious one, but maybe we shouldn't put him in if we've got Neymar, Messi, as good as Suarez has been.
Robert Lewandowski.
You've got Big Bob Lewandowski. You've got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. You've got Harry Kane in there. You've got Gonzalo Higuain, who's been fantastic for Napoli, especially this season. That's tough. I think it comes down to, as good as Harry Kane, Higuain and Aubameyang have been, Aubameyang's really come to life in this season. Over the course of the year, Lewandowski and Suarez. Lewandowski being the Euro 2016 qualifier top scorer.
I'm throwing a hand grenade in here right now, Adam.
Oh, shit.
Aubameyang has scored more goals than Suarez and Higuain and Harry Kane and Lewandowski in 2015. And that's 29 goals.
That is why Dave is here, Lawrence.
But, right.
The achievement aspect of it. The achievement aspect of it.
We'll see one, Dave.
He's won life. No.
Good point, Dave. No, really good point.
I think, because we've got so many Barcelona players
in
here...
It's disingenuous to put in Aubameyang in that team.
What about Bob?
Yeah, it's got to be Big Bob, then, right?
I do think it has to be Lewandowski, because it's actually 5 goals, 9 minutes. What an incredible... I mean, you know, anyone who witnessed that on TV in real life saw something that, you know, very few strikers in the world can do. And such a varied... You know, the determination, just the number of things.
I just felt like I was a little kid at Christmas. I started laughing, like excited laughing, when he was banging those goals, and it was really, really odd. Probably my.
Let's
going to go on to the moments of 2015, but that was mine.
We'll
it just
come
got
on
so
to that, mate.
It was odd. It was
so
really
listen,
odd.
Listen, that is going to complete our team of the year. I think Bob is a great choice for the striker. So we've got Gianluigi Buffon in goal. We've got David Alaba left back. We've got Dani Alves right back. We went for Piqué and Boateng, I believe, in centre-back. We sort of had a little change of heart from Chiellini. We went for Vidal and Busquets as the central midfielders. Iniesta just slightly ahead of them in attacking midfield. We've got Neymar on the left wing, Messi on the right wing, and Big Bob Lewandowski up front. I think that is a pretty special team of the year. Now we move on to the other awards for the year. First off, player of the year. It's obviously got to be someone who we pick for that team. And I don't think it is the obvious answer, but I don't think you can look past Lionel Messi, unfortunately. Maybe Neymar would be a very close second.
Neymar
is the player of the year. Or the combination of all three of them in one
Nessie.
Play. Nessie. Okay, what about, can you fit in Suarez?
I think I've done this. I think it works as Neyressi.
Neyressi?
Oh, yeah. Or Nawarez. Messrez.
Why don't we bend the rules and put Nemezrez in there?
Nemezrez.
Are you happy with Nemezrez, Dave?
Hashtag,
it's
going to
be Lionel Messi.
Oh, he's broken the rules. Lionel Messi. It's hard to look past him. I can't disagree there. I think he's been absolutely sensational. Messi.
Other players. I mean, it's sad to see Cristiano Ronaldo have what he's currently going through, because you know that politics is destroying a lot of good careers at Real Madrid again, and people are becoming casualties of Florentino Perez's.
Somehow he still managed to score. I love how bad year for Ronaldo is, still being the top goalscorer in the world with 55 goals, but. Yeah, I'd kill Tom Badger.
What I love is that we talk about the records really and all those other kind of things, but you know, there's the human side to him as well, which I think is very good. I imagine Messi has exactly the same type, but we don't talk about how, you know, as a professional, you also have to pull in the same direction as everyone else. And, you know, I know that Messi had that in the previous year, the problems with the head coach. And essentially, they turned it round within this year. And that's another reason why Messi maybe deserves to get that.
Yeah, it's hard to
even though allegedly he was a bit of a dick to Luis Enrique, but you know, whatever.
Is that so?
You know, I mean, I think if you flex your political muscle sometimes, maybe he believes he's right. I think things have leveled out a little bit now, but I'm a bit disappointed with both of them to some extent. Maybe he felt he knew better than Enrique, but you know, we'll see.
Okay,
maybe his camp with a dick. I don't think it's necessarily Messi, but you know, the people around him.
Let's go for Messi then. So he scored 43 goals in the Liga, twice in the Copa del Rey final, first man to win the UEFA Best Player in Europe award twice, favourite to win the Ballon d'Or as well in January. I mean, it's
essentially a celebration of the
year. In 2015, how many goals did he score?
Apparently, he scored 43.
43?
Apparently, he scored 51 goals in total. The stats I'm looking at are saying he struck 43 goals in La Liga.
Scored 33 goals in La Liga, according to my master spreadsheet of doom.
Now, this might be... The UEFA website might be doing a little thing where it includes a little bit of 2014 statistics, is what I think it's doing.
Mugging so, you off
Dave,
there, bud.
Dave, I would trust you over UEFA any day of the week. So we'll
thanks,
go
mate.
Right, so
what's happened with them, eh? Bloody hell.
yeah, you can't blame me. Manager of the Year, and I think you mentioned him there. Luis Enrique is the obvious choice. With having won the treble, it's hard to argue against that. But you've also got the likes of Pep Guardiola. Yeah. You've obviously got people impressing in the Premier League. Claudio Ranieri, of course, this season.
Could you say Arsene Wenger?
Who? Arsene Wenger?
Yeah.
I mean, you could.
I think we'll look back in the future and we'll sort of go, you know what? That man kept that club stable for such a long time.
Yeah.
And sort of kept
in a very impressive way.
In a way that we don't acknowledge.
I was thinking that. What was I thinking? I think
we don't know, Adam.
That the opinions of people and the opinions of I think Wenger mentioned this, that they're not almost rooted in fact. That opinion and fact changes. So the thing I was thinking about was obviously
although facts change.
Yeah, he basically decided not to sign Cesc Fabregas, right? And Arsenal fans gave him absolute pelters. And they were like, you know. Some Arsenal fans were saying they'd rather have Fabregas over Ozil, sell Ozil, get Fabregas in. And now Wenger looks like
a little bit silly.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It's interesting how you use that
yeah,
stick.
Yeah, but then that might change again.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what yeah. I think is interesting, that you'd use that stick to beat him with, not signing Fabregas. Maybe
but I think that alluded to the wider point that you haven't signed anyone, mate, apart from Ben Cech.
Yes,
you know?
Interesting.
And Fabregas would have been the cream on top of another level of signings. And, you know, somebody might turn that around and say, well, now you have to sign a lot of people in January because
you didn't sign anyone
in the summer. So.
But Manager of the Year, is anyone going to disagree with Luis Enrique? Has anyone got any suggestions?
There's a shout out to Jorge Sampaolo, Paoli, sorry. You know, the lad from Chile.
Paoli. Oh, yeah. Yes.
Chile manager. You know, it's a great achievement. Emre, the Sevilla manager, did very well for Sevilla, won the Europa League. You know, you've got to argue about the Poch, though, Adam. You know, he's bringing this wonderful style of football to the Spurs, lads.
I think he's done a sensational job, and I can't believe...
Pitch it to me.
I can't believe he's only been there since, I believe, it was May 2014. To have transformed this team into what it is now is incredible.
Which manager, though, won by the most goals this season? In the league, in any league. I hope I'm right here.
How's it been? I'm intrigued.
Pep Guardiola?
Is it Pep? What was the biggest, what's the most amount of goals that Pep Guardiola's team has scored this year?
Oh, mate. Did
they score 8? Or did Rafa Benitez get the most goals?
Oh, in a single game.
In a single game. That's what I'm saying, Dave. All right,
okay, mate.
Take your stats.
Oh, you mean 10? 10, pal?
They scored 10, but again, nine men, mate. 8. 8-0 margin. So he's had 2 8-0 margins in a year, is what I'm saying.
Right, let's decide on one then. I'm going to say Enrique. As good as Pochettino's been, I think he is going to be the manager of the year next year, maybe the year after.
LVG?
For Spurs. LVG. Yeah, right, let's...
Mourinho?
Enrique? Let's settle on Enrique.
It's got to be Enrique, hasn't it?
Highlight of 2015. for me, without a doubt, it was Lionel Messi nutmegging James Milner in the UEFA Champions League and seeing Pep Guardiola's amazed reaction. He sort of held his head in his hand. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. And I thought it was incredible that obviously Messi is the best player in the world, but to reduce his former manager and current Bayern Munich manager to that sort of reaction, almost a childlike, I thought was absolutely hilarious. That was my favourite moment of the year.
On the pitch.
Yes, on the pitch. Lawrence, have you got any nominations on off the pitch?
On the pitch. I'm surprised you didn't pick Eric Lamela's Rabona.
Adam. No, come on now.
That was a pretty good moment on the pitch.
What about FIFA, the downfall of FIFA? May.
I'll put the downfall of FIFA forward because I think it alludes to bigger world issues. Mm-hmm. The realisation of many world problems, the inequality of the structures that we currently have. The worry would be that the reason people have brought down FIFA was because, and some people put this argument forward, it's very, very interesting, that they're saying because the structure was no longer serving the people who set up the structure, those people themselves tried to bring it down. So when certain people lost the World Cup, they thought, well, shit, we have to look into this because people have been bought off. And ultimately, those people may fall down in their own investigation because we may have found that Germany paid to get to the very top. And other people who are at the very top of the game also put money into illegal places. So it's not just the new guys coming in, you know, the guys who are winning for the World Cup in 2022 or Russia, the people who we originally think of as, the bad guys, in inverted commas. It's also the people who we maybe think of as the good guys, not necessarily us, but portray themselves as the good guys. So we're just seeing a crumbling of the overall structures of world football. And I wonder where that's going to take us. And I think we'll see this year is the beginning of the end of the original structure of world football and the start of something else, which maybe sees the inclusion of a more diverse set of people than just the white guys that normally run football.
Yes, as enjoyable as Messi's nutmeg was, I'm happy to throw him a lot behind what is probably the most seismic sort of change in football this year, and certainly in the last 10 years, 20 years. David, what are you sort of going for?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the FIFA moment. Other moments I thought were brilliant. Lewandowski, 5 goals in 9 minutes, was absolutely fantastic. Although as a United fan, I didn't enjoy it. Chat shit and getting banged, breaking Ruud van Nistelrooy's record is a pretty good thing. You know, Jamie Vardy, rags to riches story.
Having said that, that is also the year then that we back a guy. It, not only rags to riches, but you know, rags to racism to riches.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Via. So crazy.
It was a bit of a weapon.
Right, let's go for the sort of downfall of FIFA, which kicked off in May with all those arrests made at that hotel. Goal of the year.
Guys, part of that also, though, is also the money in the air that was thrown over thrown over Blatter. Do you remember that image?
Incredible.
That was a good image.
Yes.
And I know that we'll be able... that comedian? Is he still alive? Has he been taken to prison?
I don't know if he's a comedian, Dave. I think he's a man who does funny things. I wouldn't describe him as a comedian. Should we also say, and I think this would be good for Dave, is the return of 4-4-2, or the return of the excitement of 4-4-2 and two guys up front in the Premier League. And also two guys up front for Barcelona. I mean, that's a great thing, isn't it?
You'd say so, yeah. Tactics have moved on this year, I'd say. They've evolved.
Also, the injection of money into the Premier League and how, you know, that all that extra money has taken the league a step further. And obviously, Leicester City. Leicester City started the year in 20th place, left it in, well, it would have been
joint
first.
Top.
But joint top. Joint top, but second, essentially. Yeah.
Right, goal of the year. Messi has obviously got a few nominees himself. One against Bilbao, where he sort of dribbled around 3 or 4 players, banged it into the bottom left-hand corner, I should say. Messi again against Bayern Munich in the Champions League, absolutely embarrassing Jerome Boateng and chipping it into the goal. You've got Florenzi's incredible goal. Roma, it's almost from the halfway line, banging it in from an impossible distance. Any other nominees? Don't say the Rabona by Eric Lamela.
Jack Wilshere versus Norwich.
Was that this year?
I think that was this year, right?
What was that? I think that might have been the end of last year.
Maybe. Oh, it might have been November, actually.
Yeah, I'm tempted to say it was against... I think...
It was Norwich, definitely.
Yeah, but I think
it might have been last year.
I think that was... You know what, Dave? I'm going to surprise you here. Are you talking about the Tiki-Taka goal?
Yes.
Yeah, that was 2013.
13,
yeah.
You're joking?
It was October 2013.
Uh-oh. Dave, hang up the call, Dave. You're not welcome
on this podcast. So, Dave wanted to include a goal from 2 years ago.
I believe that is the best goal.
It was an incredible goal, to be fair.
Lewandowski's fourth against Wolfsburg in his incredible run to the five-time champion was unbelievable.
Okay.
What was your favorite? Do you have a favorite Vine of the year? I've got some favourite fan channel rants.
Well, that's not actually one of the categories.
Like, oh, is it not?
What
okay.
about goal well, though? What's your suggestion for goal?
For goal, I'm going to go with Lionel Messi and the Bayern Munich goal. The carbon copy of his other goals, basically. Classic.
I'm
Messi.
Happy to sell on that.
Great goal. That Norwich goal. I mean, that Norwich goal was a great goal.
Yeah. That was 2 years ago.
Sorry, that was 2 years ago.
I really like that goal that Maradona scored, dribbled around the whole England team.
And that one, and then the handball one. That was a pretty good one this year.
I can't believe there's so many great goals scored this year. Incredible.
This year? What we should say is how many goals are the best goal that was vined this year? I mean, that was a good...
Probably the Messi one. Because there was, as Dave was sort of mentioned earlier, there was a lot of good photoshops of Jerome Boateng falling into a hole in the ground and all this sort of stuff. So... I did enjoy that very much. I'm going to go for Messi then. Messi against Bayern Munich. That was an incredible moment to watch. How about signing of the year? I like that. Who's been the best signing of 2015? So either in January, in the January window, or in the summer.
Anthony Martial.
His impact has sort of died down in the last...
Waned a little bit, yeah. It's been
10 games. Who were the big signings this summer? I can't even remember who they were now.
There weren't that many big moves this year. I mean, not in the seismic way that we've seen in previous years. I mean, Di Maria moved to PSG, but he's not,
He started doing very well, has he not?
He started performing, started assisting goals and stuff, but forget about him, though.
Yeah, we don't talk about him.
Could you say? I mean, yeah. There's the whole Sanchez didn't really sign this.
Vidal
Pedro,
Bayern,
Pedro to Chelsea.
Nah, it's not worked out, has it? Silly Pedro went to a team after playing possession football for his whole career to go into a team that plays in the break. Silly boy.
I've got a suggestion. Dele Alli, we signed him in January.
He's come full circle. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Signed him in January, lent him back to MK Dons, got him back in the summer, obviously, and he's been pretty sensational. There's no other 2015 big signing.
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, no, you're right. Kevin De Bruyne.
He's been very good. He's performing at that level, right?
But.
Raheem Sterling?
Raheem Sterling's been good.
But not great.
Not outstanding.
Jurgen Klopp.
Well, that's a good suggestion. But
that is a signing and a coup for Liverpool.
I'm going to suggest Dele Alli.
I think we'll go with Dele Alli.
Yeah, I think we should go with Dele Alli.
Let's go with Dele Alli.
And see what the whole think.
I'm sure they would be able to give us some better suggestions. But how about worst signing of the year? Now,
I hate doing this kind of thing. It's so negative.
I know, but... When did Mario Balotelli join Liverpool?
Don't remember. Yeah, I think it was the end of the summer, wasn't it? Not this year. So technically, Adam, you can
disappointing.
Yeah,
very disappointing. Pedro hasn't exactly worked out at Chelsea so far, but it feels harsh to sort of label someone. What about Juan Cuadrado? He came in January in Chelsea, and in terms of his badge signing for Chelsea, didn't really work out.
It was 34 million, wasn't it? Or 33 Jesus. Million. So it was a lot of money, but Chelsea's fault why it didn't work, I think.
Yeah, of course. But I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying that in terms of the worst deal.
What about Wilfred Bony to City? Because I've got a lot of mates that support City. They absolutely hate Bony.
Do they?
Yeah, they're not a fan at all. You know, you see him take the penalty at the end of the game before they played Leicester City and missed it, obviously. And then I just think that... It's a man with low confidence right now, and it's just not worked out for him, the move.
How about Memphis, Dave?
Hey, mate, you better back off it, right?
No.
One thing down your throat, and that is Roberto Firmino.
Ooh.
Nah, man. I think that's
41 million euro.
He was injured for an first part, and then he came back and had some absolutely cracking performances. So I think it would be weird if you went for Mina.
It would seem harsh. What about Danny Ings?
He's been rubbish, right? He hasn't played for a few months, Lawrence.
He hasn't? Who?
Danny Ings.
I mean, Danny Ings has been injured as well, Dave.
God, he's rubbish.
Dave, you're so harsh. Dave, you are so fucking harsh, Dave.
What about Bastian Schweinsteiger?
Matty O'Darmian.
As we record this, guys, Ronaldo has just missed a penalty. Just saying.
Ronaldo. Just saying.
Ronaldo just missed.
I mean, you've got Newcastle made a few sort of dodgy-ish signings over the summer.
I feel like it's a bad one because I don't know. I feel like there have been a lot of good signings, a lot of level signings this year.
What about Baba Rahman? He was 21. He's hardly played, but you can't really say.
A bit harsh.
This bit of the podcast is getting boring now, guys. Trying to find negative things to say is just boring. All right, 2016 is all about positive.
Let's go Patrick Bamford's loan move to Chelsea because for his player development and where he was as a footballer, should have gone back to Borough.
I'm going to say Radamel Falcao's Chelsea because they knew it.
Let's do that. That's easy.
I don't know why they did that. Right, I want to end on the quote of the year. That's what I want to end on.
Chat shit, get banged.
Oh, I mean, that wasn't even in my list. That's so good. It's hard to... I don't know if I should even bother ringing it. No, you know what? Let's go.
I don't actually know what it means because he was saying it about people who... The problem is it came from a source which no one likes, and also it came from a source which was saying it about stupid things. So it's like, chat shit, get banged. Essentially what he was saying was, if you say rubbish, then you'll get banged. And you're like, well, yeah, but what's rubbish?
Good question. What is rubbish?
I mean, I think that's why it's such a good quote, because it can mean anything to anyone. I mean, it could mean something different to me as it does to you, Lawrence. I think that's the it's such a mystery, and yeah, it's defined the year in many ways, and people love it. So it's difficult to argue against it. Quote of the year, chat shit, get banged. Love it. That wraps up the podcast for today. That was good. We picked a team of the year.
Even if you do say so, what was your personal highlight of footballing personal highlight?
My personal footballing highlight was doing the front three. Talking about football every week.
That was a good one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, but it was a big one. We did start it this year, you know that, right?
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Having started that,
I do think there have been a lot of this is the year of the beginning of football podcasts, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There's a few big players jumping in.
I think I quite enjoyed when I couldn't say Roberto Martinez. That was pretty funny.
Oh yeah, Roberto Mantini. That was a pretty good
Martini.
Yeah, it was in a bad place then.
Oh, right. Anyway,
your mouth
listen.
Was in a bad place.
Go on Twitter right now, type in @the_front_3. Let us know your teams of the year. Let us know your players, your quotes, your managers, all that good stuff. We want to hear it. Until next time, we're going to be back on Saturday with the Q&A pod as always. Lawrence, where can the good people find you?
Lozcast, LOZCAST, and of course, in Starbucks in Kensington.
Lovely. And Dave?
At Squawker Dave, SQUAWKADAV.
Lovely, Jack Butley. You can find me on Twitter @AdamBoltwood, on YouTube @TheFootballRepublic. Until Saturday.
That's a good point. We bloody started a channel. Well, you did. We just got involved, but it was good. That's a good point, Adam. That should be your personal highlight. I don't understand.
Yeah, but my personal highlight is the front three because did it on our own.
What is your boss going to say? Your boss is going to. I mean, if I was your boss, you know, and he is a great guy, I know. Thanks for employing me. I'd be furious, Adam.
Oh, no.
Absolutely furious.
Listen, the football rep is definitely my highlight of the year. No,
I'd say that if you don't go to your desk on Monday morning and it says, chat shit, get sacked, I'm going to be really disappointed.
No, listen, the Football Republic is incredible, but
it's in free
health. Ours, mate. It's ours. We started that ourselves out of nothing. And look where we are now.
For that point, then, we should actually say, what's your aim in 2016, surely? To make this the number one podcast on iTunes. I want to see is this the number one podcast.
To be honest, Lawrence, I'm going to undercut you there and say that's not my aim. Because
okay. Right.
It doesn't matter massively to me if we're number one. It just matters that we do a really good podcast and that we're happy with it.
That's a good point.
And that the people enjoy listening to it. And if you're out there listening to it and you enjoy that podcast, that's
then
enough
pay
for
us
me.
Money, that's is what it. I'd say. Give no, us all your money.
That is enough for me. I love it when people tweet us and they say things like, how come this podcast is so good? That is more important to me than being number one, for example.
Yeah, it's really the money for me, Adam. So if you could just sort of give me the... No,
I'll cut you the check.
Obviously, that is a really good...
We enjoy doing the podcast. We enjoy the fact that people enjoy listening to it. And that's the most important thing. Yeah.
It is how many... I found so many intelligent people listen to this podcast this year. Yeah. I'm not just sort of blowing smoke. There have been a lot of people who put in the best questions.
So, the questions we get are ridiculous. And you can look forward to us answering them on Saturday. So until then, do go changing, because change is an important part of personal growth.
See you in
2016. Goodbye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.